How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
Good morning and welcome on in to the CDGA Golf Show here on ESPN 1000. It's brought to you by Glenview Park Golf Club. We're with you every single Saturday usually. Today we're with you on a Sunday. We'll also be with you 2 weeks from today as well on a Sunday as well. Let's head on out to the Jersey Mike's hotline, Jersey Mike's a sub above, where we find Sam Bettinardi, president of Bettinardi Golf. He joins us here on the CDGA Golf Show. By the way, this segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort Experience, a Michigan masterpiece. Good morning, Sam. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning. What's going on, guys?
Sam, good morning. Hey, congrats on 25 years. 25 years of being in this crazy golf business, and you've seen quite a bit. And tell us a little about what's happening in the world of Bettinardi this week.
Oh, man, the world of Bettinardi this week. We got the BMW Championship coming to our hometown, and we have our grand opening of our new Studio B in Oak Brook, Illinois. We're so excited. I've been working on it the last year, and we have a soft opening Tuesday for friends and family, and then Friday's the big day. And it's been a lot of hard work, but I can't wait to show the world. I mean, our studio that's been around the last 15 years has been in Tinley Park, you know, above our factory floor. It's been by appointment only. There's one putter bay. Now we're moving to Oak Brook, right next to Michael Jordan's restaurant on 22nd Street. We're going to have two putter bays, a simulator for wedge fittings, a retail space to shop the latest and greatest of Bettinardi products, the Hive, and then a room where you can design your own custom putters. So just can't wait to get that open, and it's been a lot behind the scenes making it happen.
I mean, that does sound exciting because everybody has said, well, if you're going to go down to Bettinardi, you've got to figure it out. You know, you got to make this appointment, and it's quite the effort. So I think there's a lot of people excited about more of that Oak Brook location, if you will. But tell us, why should the average golfer even consider getting a putter, you know, a putter fitting, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. Everybody, you know, probably wants to gain more distance off the tee and go get fit and try to get another 8 to 12 yards. But, you know, we all know how many times we use our putter during a round. It accounts for more than 40% of your shots during a round of golf. So if there's anything I want to improve on, it's always putting, because I know if my irons are off or I'm off the green, I need to get up and down and grind for, you know, a par. I got to make a putt. Or if I want to win a match, I got to make a big putt. So, you know, that's the whole game of golf, and I think it's just crucial. And we see time and time again people coming in and getting fit, or even going to some of our other retailers around the country, you know, going, I had no idea I needed to get fit for a putter. I dropped three shots, or, you know, I shot the best round of my life. So it's just crucial. And again, people try to chase distance, but to me it comes down to, you know, where the money's made, and that's with the putter.
Sam Bettinardi with us here from Bettinardi Golf. He joins us on the CDGA Golf Show. So, Sam, 25 years in this business, what's to you been the thing that's changed the most over the course of that time?
Oh, man. Well, my father started the business in 1998, you know, and he was milling putters for other golf OEMs in the mid-90s, and branching out on his own was a big step. And I joined the company 10 years ago and have been and more running it the last 2 or 3 years. And I think some of the big moments, you know, winning majors, you know, Molinari winning the 2018 British Open, Matt Fitzpatrick last year winning the U.S. Open. But I think that's been a lot of big highlights, some of the major victories. And then just the expansion, you know, in the last 10 years, you know, we've bought three new buildings. We're moving our studio to Oak Brook. So it's been fun going from when I started 12, 15 employees, now, you know, 90 employees. So just over time, seeing that grow has been really fun.
That's outstanding to hear that growth, especially in a very niche-oriented, you know, product category that you guys have, because it's basically putters and wedges, right? You don't get into any irons or any woods. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. Yep, putters, wedges. We do sell and offer a lot of really cool and fun head covers that we do in the Hive online. We have a big collector base that gets into it, buying and selling them. You know, it's kind of like the Jordan shoe game. So yeah. I'd say those are our three big things: putters, wedges, head covers.
I was gonna bring up the head covers to you because, dude, these things pop, man.
Yeah, they're like, amazing.
They look amazing. Just scrolling through the website and seeing these, and just seeing them on people's bags as well. Like, what goes into, you guys step into the lab, what goes into making these head covers?
Oh, man. Well, one of the big things that's happened over the last 3 years is we started making our head covers in-house. So that's been really cool to be able to, you know, walk down from my office onto the floor and, you know, choose threads, choose leathers, you know, try different techniques in order to, you know, to impress our customer base. But, yeah, the conversation starts with me and our design team, and they say, this is an idea, let's see it. And I have five very talented designers that can come up with some unbelievable stuff, and then we just bounce around ideas until we're happy. And then we manufacture it, sell it, wash, rinse, repeat.
You know, one of the things, Sam, that during COVID, we saw the golf boom, right? And we saw younger people get into golf. How much of that and sort of the demographic addition of the younger golfer goes into the creation of some of these head covers? Because you look at some of these and like some of them seem like they're tailored to younger people because they are so cool.
Yeah. Well, my dad, he's just turned 63. I'm 33. So I'm trying to cater to a little bit more of my demographic in terms of what I think's cool, different colorways, different art that we're putting on the product. And with our production line of putters that are $400 to $450, they're very classic. They're very timeless. And then people and golfers of all ages, for that matter, they want flair on their golf bag. They don't want to look like everybody else that comes with the stock head cover from the OEM. I think having, you know, fun and great variety in head covers gives people the expression of, you know, their style, you know, to dress up the bag any way they want. And it's really fun designing that way and seeing what we can come out with.
And dress it up you do. I'm guilty as charged of collecting those putter covers, and I've got a few of the covers that you did for the Chicago Blackhawks, which I have to watch my golf bag wherever I put it for fear that thing is going to disappear because it looks just that good. Overall, it looks like Bettinardi, I mean, through the creativeness that you have, looks like to be a fun place to work. And it seems you exude that fun based on some of not only the tour staffers, but some of your ambassadors. How do you decide whether you're going to sign an Ian Happ or a friend of the show, Robbie Gold, for example? What's the conversation in the boardroom like when you're trying to figure these things out?
Yeah, I mean, we're a Chicago brand, right? And one of our goals, you know, our three pillars of our brand is heritage, craftsmanship, and innovation. And then one of the other goals is to own Chicago, right? So when you mention those two players, Ian Happ is, you know, arguably one of the better players on the Chicago Cubs, great hitter, and he's an avid golfer. He's a 2 handicap. I played with him multiple times, and it just was a great fit. He loves the game of golf. He's been around golf his whole life, and he's in our backyard. And then you mentioned Robbie Gold, who's longtime Bear, you know, fan favorite here in Chicago, who's another great, great player, scratch golfer. And we're looking for people that are great players that fit the Bettinardi brand. There's another guy on there, Michael Pena, who's born and raised in Chicago. He went to Marist High School, and he made it big in acting. And, again, we love people with those Chicago roots and trying to, you know, pull together for the Bettinardi name.
Well, you mentioned Matt Fitzpatrick. I'm sure recruiting his brother was probably an easy recruit, or was it?
Actually, it was not that easy. I remember the conversation. That's funny. We signed him this year, and he was in college, and I remember asking Matt, I go, Matt, your brother's number 2 amateur in the world. You know, can you put in a good word for me? And he goes, Sam, you know, my brother's going to make his own equipment decision. Sorry. I'm like, oh, gosh. You know, so we got to work at this thing a little bit. So we ended up making him some putters, and he fell in love. And obviously with the success his brother had, he knew that, you know, we can make anything, right? The fun part about what we did for his brother, Matt, is he was using a putter, a Yes putter that is a dead brand. There is no more Yes putters. They're out of business. So I remember he told me he was buying putters off eBay. And I'm like, why in the world are you buying your putters off eBay? Why don't you just come to us and we'll make you something that's nearly identical to what you've been using since you were a kid. We did that, and the rest is history. But we love the Fitzpatricks, great, great family. Alex finally, you know, broke through, finished top 20 at the British Open a few weeks ago, and just won on the Challenge Tour last week. So He's a great, great player and something to watch in the future.
So back to getting the average person fit. So what, in your opinion, what are the most common changes or people's faults in their putter? What's the biggest takeaway that most average players realize after they go through a comprehensive Bettinardi fitting? What are they taking away in most cases that they've learned?
Sure. I mean, the three things that we fit for, right, are length, lie, and loft. And I think a lot of people come in with the wrong length putter, right? They'll buy it off the rack or they'll get it at their pro shop, and it's typically 35 inches, where a lot of people usually are less. Let's say 34 and a half, 34. And that's why fitting is so important. Another big thing I hear all the time is people have been using the wrong putter for their whole life or many years, where they've been using a blade and then they should be in a mallet, or they're a mallet person, they should be in a blade, because that is based on toe hang, right? So if your putting stroke is more straight back, straight through, we're trying to get them into something that's more face balanced, where if they have more arc in their stroke, we're trying to find a putter that has toe hang. So with that being said, I think just coming in, seeing the studio, again, going to one of our retailers, you know, we're in many accounts all over the Chicagoland area, just get fit. It's so important, and I think a lot of people will be shocked or just, you know, blown away at what the results would be after a proper fitting.
Yeah, and to your point about a proper fitting, one thing I learned was grip size. I did not realize how much your grip can actually change your stroke.
It can, yeah. I mean, obviously, Super Stroke's been super popular the last 5-7 years with the oversized grips. But if people want a little bit more, you know, quiet in their hands, they go bigger. If they want to have a little bit more feel, they go more traditional. So all those things. I mean, when we're fitting too, guys, we ask people to find a putter. We start out the whole fitting with find a putter that looks good to your eyes, right? And we never give lessons, because we know that people are always going to go back to their natural tendency. And if they find a putter that looks good to their eyes, when they're on the green standing over a 5-foot crucial putt, they need to have confidence. So it starts with finding something that looks good to you. And if it looks good to you, you're going to feel good while you're putting. And then if you know you have the proper specs dialed into your putter, you're going to make more putts. It's pretty simple.
And speaking of changes in putters, Scotty and Rory are big time in the news this week. And I wanted to ask you your opinion, mallet versus blade. When should somebody putt with a mallet? When should somebody putt with a blade, in your opinion?
I'm going to just say the same thing. It goes back to looks. I've switched putters probably more than I'd like to admit my whole life, having, you know, the candy store at my access to change. But I'm a mallet guy. I go back to mallets because, to me, I have more confidence with that larger head and that more material in the flange versus a blade is a little skinny to me. And although I think blades are beautiful and they're gorgeous, I'd love to putt with one, I just can't do it. So it goes back to looks, and it goes back to what looks really good to me and what do I feel most confident in. And it's funny, you even brought up Rory. I remember we saw him at the U.S. Open, and he mentioned he's done with a blade. He just doesn't have the confidence in the blade. And again, going back to when we won the 2018 British Open with Molinari, he was using a mallet most of the year. He came into Studio B, left with a blade, our BB0, and he changed the alignment from a flange line to a dot on the top. And he went on fire, and he won the Quicken Loans and second at the John Deere and the Open, 5-0 at the Ryder Cup. And it just goes to show, there's a guy who was 37 years old, 38, who had never really been properly fit. He comes and gets fits, and it changes his life. So it's just personal preference and what looks good to you.
Sam Bettinardi from Bettinardi Golf with us for a few more minutes here on the CDGA Golf Show. So, Sam, you've got the retail store opening up this week. You've got the best head covers in the game right now. Like, what's next for Bettinardi Golf?
Oh, man. Next for Bettinardi Golf, we are poised for some great things. I mentioned the store. I mentioned some great tour players we're working with, hopefully headed into next year, and just continue to make the best product in the world.
Awesome. Well, appreciate you spending some time with us here, and best of luck moving forward. And we're looking forward to seeing more of your head covers and your putters and wedges in people's bags.
And hopefully somebody wins at Olympia Fields with one.
Hey, we got a good history there.
We won a
nice major there in 2003. So
yes, you did.
20 years later, it'd be nice.
Well, best of luck to you there. Sam Bettinardi from Bettinardi Golf with us on the Jersey Mike's Hotline. Jersey Mike's a sub above. When we come back, I do want to talk to you, Mike, because we've mentioned the could we see a split now between LIV and the PGA Tour? Everything seemed like it was good, all good. There was going to be a partnership. But is that partnership concrete? We'll talk about that when we come back. This segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort, up North Michigan Golf without the drive.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app. Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki.
This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan, usually with you on Saturdays from 8 to 10 a.m., talking all things in the world of golf. Instead, today we're on Sunday after some Bears football yesterday. We'll also be with you on Sunday 2 weeks from now as well, right here on ESPN 1000, but usually on Saturdays talking all things golf. You want to join us, 312-332-3776. So the big news of the golf season this year has been the PIF, the LIV Golf League, and the PGA Tour striking a deal to merge. And it was something that, I mean, just kind of came out of nowhere. It was one of the best kept secrets we've seen, maybe even in sports history, right? Like the fact that all of a sudden, boom, there's a bomb drop on CNBC, and you've got Jay Monahan and Yasser up there on CNBC talking about this merger that's going to take place. And now things are looking a little bit shakier because you look at the way that everything has sort of transpired since then, and it almost feels like the PGA Tour is going out and trying to have a little bit of a plea for help at this point because the ink's not dry on the deal yet. There was a deal in place, but nothing was officially signed. And if this falls through, boy, Jay Monahan's going to have some egg on his face because I think a lot of people applauded him for what he did to bring together the PGA Tour and LIV Golf because, let's be honest, I think both entities sort of needed each other to exist. The LIV Tour needed it for popularity's sake, and the PGA Tour needed it for financial sake. And you look at the state of where both tours sort of were, it all made sense to get these two together. However, Tom Hoge is a little bit skeptical. There was a meeting earlier this week before the St. Jude to talk about the merger. And we'll just get an update. What's going on? What's happening here? And Tom Hoge says it's a very real possibility that the deal to merge may not materialize. And there is some skepticism now surrounding whether or not this thing gets pulled off.
Yeah, there really is. And as each day clicks off the calendar and we get closer to the end of the year, the pressure heats up for this deal to get done. Now, there's a part of me that thinks in a conspiracy way, you know, you mentioned Jay Monahan. Would he have egg on his face or would he? Because he now has an agreement, at least verbally, in place that says even if this deal doesn't get done at the end of the year, that they're going to walk away. But they're going to walk away and no lawsuits. Mm-hmm. So now that helps the PGA Tour with losing hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, I think on almost a daily basis, mm-hmm. you know, on these legal fees.
Would have been
fees.
Bled dry,
no doubt. And they admit it. And so that being said, I think that, you know, Jay actually, if they walk away and the LIV decides to keep doing its thing and they, if they still maintain, now this to me is where it all boils down to. If the deal doesn't go through, does that open up the poaching, you know, recruiting yeah. wars again?
Yes.
Because I think there'll be some players that now, given the landscape, may say, that LIV thing kind of does look appealing. And if, you know, we have sort of taken the negative connotation out of it a little bit with sort of the situation where we're at now, that they're getting along and that working together in the spirit of things. And even if we have to walk away, we're still going to acknowledge one another. Now, how LIV will fit in the golf ecosystem after the end of the year remains to be seen. But between the players not wanting to jump over to the PGA Tour, so you have a cadre of guys that just want to keep things the way that they have it and live, just stay the way that it is. And they would be happy. It would coexist. Now, would they get, you know, world ranking points and that kind of thing? That remains to be seen. But as far as trying to jump back over to the PGA Tour, there just doesn't seem to be that desire. So I'm not sure how much really has to be thought through and what that penalty will be, or the penalties and the degrees of them based on, I guess, how you acted and what you said or didn't say. So, yeah, but otherwise, if all bets are off, poaching is now back on, and we're back to square one, then Jay Monahan has a huge amount of egg on his face. But there's still quite a bit of time left in the, you know, in the game here. Mm-hmm. But there's not a lot. I mean, before you know it, it's going to be September 1st. The tour season will be put to bed, and all we have left is a question mark. What happens next? Because there has not been a breath of, here's going to be the schedule, here's what it's going to look like, here's how it's going to fit. There hasn't been anything even rumored about, you know, ventured about, or even talked about in any way, shape, or form. It's just like what you said about Tom Hoagie. The real possibility is that deal doesn't happen. And, you know, conspiracy-wise, is Jay Monahan just standing there bouncing his ball, just going to wait this thing out and then get his tour back the way he had it? I don't know. But at the other hand, the tour has a lot to gain financially by making this work. So there is just so much still to be learned. But what is most interesting with the, you know, development of Tiger jumping on, they now have six players on the board, on a board of 11. So they have the majority. They control this. So I think that makes the players feel a lot better. And as a result, they had the fewest people attend a meeting with Jay this past week, when only 25 of them showed up. And a lot of them just didn't have any care to, because I think they know we've got Tiger and I think we're going to be okay. I think Tiger's going to look out for the best interest of all of us, and we have a player majority now, so that makes us feel better.
The other thing, too, with all of this is, let's be honest, I think both you and I probably thought this thing would have been ironed out by now, right? And the fact that we're not at that point has been a little bit curious, and the longer it drags out, the more and more I start to believe that maybe this thing won't happen. And even when it did happen, I was still a little skeptical of if we'll see it come to fruition because of the player response. And because, I mean, we saw the blindsiding for all these players. I mean, some of them found out like 2 or 3 minutes before CNBC hit the air that day,
right?
And had the report there and had the interview. So it's going to be one of those things where we'll watch over the next couple of months here. But if it doesn't come to fruition, there's going to be a lot of questions that need to be answered. I mean, part of one of the big things that I think a lot of these players were looking forward to are these loyalty lump sums that were supposed to be coming their way. They were supposed to be rewarded with these monster bonuses for not defecting from the PGA Tour to go over and play for LIV. What's going to happen to those now, right? Like, for some of these guys who are maybe on the fence and maybe had an inkling that something like this could be happening, whether they're being told by their agents or by just hitting on the range, talking with other golfers, like, what's going to happen to all of this now? Because then, like, you're right, you talk about the poaching. If this deal doesn't come to be, expect, I won't say a mass exodus, but there will be, like, there'll be a pretty big jump.
Yeah.
You'd imagine there'll be quite a few players that do ultimately make the leap for the financial security.
So I'll ask you a question. Let's just say Tyler Aki finishes in the top 30 last year, the top 50 the year before, but now you're 75th, and this
here's who it is. You gave me the player. It's Justin Thomas.
There you go.
Like, what does Justin Thomas do,
right,
if this happens?
That's right. Or Adam Scott. He's number 72, and he was rumored to be going with the Aussies, right? But he never did until maybe now. Who knows? That's where a lot of things, with all the changes that the tour has made, making it tougher to get to that finals, where now all of a sudden I can take a lump sum and go. Gary Woodland was on the precipice of jumping over to Brooks Koepka's team when he sold out Matthew Fitzpatrick. But that was right around June 6th because that announcement came and the Gary Woodland-Brooks Koepka conversation had to cease right then and there. And he was with an eyelash of jumping over. And so how many other guys are thinking now going, you know what, I should have, and especially if they don't pay these guys those lump sums, whew, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to rethink, you know, their position on this whole thing for sure.
Here's another name for you. What about Will Zalatoris? Guy who's another dealt with guy. A lot of injuries right. this season. We really haven't seen him this year.
That's right.
That's another guy. And he didn't have to make the jump this year. He kind of could sit on the sidelines because he's been nursing an injury all season long pretty much. But what happens with him?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's another prime candidate. Guy with a pretty big name within the sport. Like, that's another big one. That would be a big get for LIV Golf, and that would be a name that certainly would not shock me.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. And, you know, and to your point, you know, Will may have some relief because of his injury status and playing next year. But on the other hand, if somebody's going to wave $100 million to him and say, come on over and join us and have some fun and play in shorts and play 54 holes in a whole different mindset. And, you know, as I start to read and watch and, you know, listen to some of these interviews that these guys have, when they truly speak from the heart, I'm talking about the LIV players, they really have a fraternity out there yeah. amongst themselves. And it's kind of a cool thing. I mean, and they are having a ball. And it may not be what they thought it was going to be early on in terms of some of the backlash early, but now that it has, you know, time has healed a lot of wounds on the way, I think there's a lot of people that if I would have interviewed him week one or two into their LIV journey, they would have probably said, you know what, I may be second guessing what I just did. Now interview him and they're going to be, yeah, no. I made the right decision. Mm-hmm. I like where I'm at. This is where I'm going to be. It's been good for my family. It's good for me. And it's good for my financial security.
No doubt. All right, when we come back, we will take any of your calls. Are you losing confidence that we will see a PGA Tour and LIV merger? 312-332-3776. This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
This segment brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our three Chicagoland locations today. Talking all things golf with you here on the CDGA Golf Show. We've been discussing, could we see a falling through of the deal between the PGA Tour and LIV? Are you starting to lose a little bit of confidence and maybe it's happening, it actually coming to fruition? 312-332-3776 if you want to join us. Pete is in Glen Oaks. What's up, Pete?
Hi, guys. I was at a restaurant in Martha's Vineyard the other day, and Peter Jacobson was at the table next to him. And I just asked him, I said, do you think JT should get a new swing coach? And he said he's been with his father too long. He didn't think he would. I'm just wondering, what are your guys' thoughts on JT getting a new swing coach?
Well, personally, JT has had that relationship with his dad, and I think it's one that has treated him well. I just think that JT's issue becomes more with the putter than it is more with the iron game. Although, you know, any change for a guy like him could be a good change. Mm-hmm. But I think for him to quasi-divorce his father, I think it would be, hey, why don't we get another opinion in here versus just saying, I'm going to drop you as my coach and go solely with another player. But I think Justin needs to do something to change it up because this has not been a typical JT season in a year that...
It's been a disaster.
It has been an absolute disaster. And, you know, interesting experience you had seeing Peter Jacobson. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, any change, you know, when you get into dire straits like this, whether it's an actual club, a coach, even a caddy, I think some form of change needs to happen with JT, and that he has to have an inner conversation with himself where some of that change really needs to begin. And does it need to begin with himself? Is he holding himself accountable? Is he still practicing the way that he did? Is he still going about things the way that he did? Or is personal life taking away a few things in the way of time, preparation, both physically and mentally? I don't know. But there has to be some change. Otherwise, if you keep going like this, it's not going to end well. And one thing's for certain, he's going to be on the outside looking in on Ryder Cup. And now he's at the mercy of how the rest of the players play versus how he could have played.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he could just do the easy fix, right? Like, hey, Butch Harmon, what are you doing today? Right?
Exactly.
Like, it's worked for Ricky, clearly. Who knows? Maybe he can turn around JT because he's sort of heading down the Ricky trajectory right now, and not the good way that we saw Ricky where he is right now. But if he could get that little quick fix on his swing, maybe that's the secret sauce that he needs right there. But there's a lot of things with JT, and you bring up the Ryder Cup. Like, if you're Zach Johnson, how can you pick him at this point? Like, sure, you can go off of his past right now, but he's not playing good golf.
Yeah.
I mean, he's missing out on the FedEx Cup playoffs here, and like, this is, he almost had that chip on 18.
Did.
I mean, you saw him collapse right out on the fairway there. Like, he was so close.
Yep.
So close. And who knows, maybe that would have been the thing that he needed, because he had a terrific round three, but then round four, things started to fall apart for him there. Not fall apart, but he just came up a little bit short there lining up in 70th place there. But right now, for Zach Johnson, like,
it's tough to pick him. I mean, if you're Zach, I mean, if you really want to pick him, then you're rooting for a lot of non-Americans to go up that leaderboard and do well in these playoffs so that you can say, well, none of these guys really showed me much, so I am going to select experience over, you know, rookies that have performed well but then didn't play well in the playoffs. The problem is there's a lot of good players doing a lot of good things right now, and I think they will continue to do things. And as time moves on, I think Zach Johnson's opinion of picking Justin is going to keep fading as time wears on, which is too bad. And it was almost symbolic when that chip didn't go in and he crashed to the ground. It was kind of like, there go the Ryder Cup hopes with it, you know. Mm-hmm. And did how little, you know, what a cruel game this can be at times. He finished 71st. I mean, at that point, you might as well finish 75th.
Right. He almost would rather.
Yeah, I know. Then it's like, oh, yeah, I didn't have much of a chance. But he was within an eyelash of actually playing this week. But, you know, back to Pete's call, you know, I started to see flashes of the old JT again. So mm-hmm. it's in there, but I think JT just has to have an honest assessment with himself first before making such a dramatic change that Pete alludes to.
Like, if we were to play this guy or that guy for the Ryder Cup, like Justin Thomas right now or a Keegan Bradley?
I got to go with Keegan Bradley.
Right. It's like you look at the list of names that you'll have to be picking. Like, I'm just looking at the Ryder Cup standings right now. All right, so the guys who are currently on the outside looking in, these guys would have to be captain's picks right now. I'll just go down the list here. Like, Max Homa.
In.
Cam Young.
In.
Jordan Spieth.
He's got to be in.
Yeah. Colin Morikawa. Not playing great, but you're taking him over JT.
Oh, right. Especially this week, you certainly are.
Mm-hmm. Sam Burns.
Over JT,
yeah.
But there's probably other people I picked before Sam Burns.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Sam Burns right now, he is 12th.
Yeah.
So, and then, I mean, Ricky Fowler.
Like, see, that's who I would take before him.
Yes. Taking Ricky over JT, too.
Because what's interesting is you got to start thinking about, well, who am I going to pair with Jordan? Who am I going to pair with, mm-hmm. you know, Max Homa?
Yeah.
Who am I going to pair with Brooks Koepka? That's the one that really intrigues me.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a good
do
point.
You go back and grab Bryson, who just is fresh off of a 58,
yes. mm-hmm.
including a bogey? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I mean, I was at the Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits watching Bryson DeChambeau drive the first green to start Sunday. What a way for the Ryder Cup to get going for the American side. My son and I were greenside, and when Bryson flew it on the green, it wasn't like dribble, kind of get on the green. He flew it on the green, and that started the momentum for the Americans. And, you know, so you got to think about those kinds of things. You know, would Bryson and Brooks, as much as they didn't like each other for a while, make the most formidable pairing now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's... I'm watching with all kinds of interest in what Zach does and how he's going to figure this thing out. But what he asked for, he's getting. He wanted the hardest decision to have to be made, and it's happening.
Right. And listen, JT, if he sinks that chip, the decision becomes a lot easier. But boy, is this going to be difficult now, yeah. Because we're all kind of on pins and needles now playing the waiting game at this point.
And unfortunately for JT, he's going to have to sit and watch all of this unfold. Now, knowing JT, he's going to be pulling for all of his friends to do well.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't make the team, I know he'll be a great ambassador. Now, the first thing I would do if I was Zach Johnson, I'd make him an assistant. I'd have him there because of the locker room.
Yes.
You know, and just because of that chemistry. And maybe that's what's going through his mind. You just don't know. Captains have all kinds of power when it comes to picking guys. Like, I want this guy to be there and that kind of thing. So I could see that happening.
And listen, it's something too. Like, and JT, great dude, but like, would he even want that role too? Right? Like, you're kind of outside looking in. You know that you've got it in you, but you're not allowed to play. Like, it's, I don't know. It'd be tough.
If I were JT, I'd accept that role, and here's why. I would tell everyone, this is preparing me to be ultimately what I want to be, and that's a captain, because I've won a major, and I've won a couple of them, and specifically the PGA of America's majors.
It's true.
So he's a shoe-in. When he decides he wants to be a captain, and I think if he took the mature way and said, you know what, I am going to go over there and do this for the American team and show the world that going to Rome for me isn't beneath me. It's the thing that I think could also help us get over the hump and win on a European soil for the first time in 30 years and be a part of that in that regard. Because trust me, JT's going to play on some other Ryder Cup teams if he does not make this team. But I think this would cement his legacy and future in terms of being one of our future captains in probably another decade and a half.
Yeah, because like you think about it, he's sort of that elder statesman now of this new wave of golfers. It's him and Spieth.
Yes,
they're both 30 years old right now.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right. When we come back, we will take a look of what's going on around the CDGA. This segment, sponsored by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our three Chicagoland locations today.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Thank you to Jake Cantu for producing today's show. Thank you to Sam Bettinardi for joining us as well. If you missed anything, check it out on the CDGA Golf Show podcast on the ESPN Chicago app or wherever you get the CDGA Golf Show podcast. This segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, a pure golf experience. Mike, what is going on around the CDGA this week? Busy week.
Yeah, we do have a busy week. Well, first and foremost, folks, the BMW. After today's round in Memphis, the world sets their sights on Olympia Fields in Olympia Fields, Illinois. And we are in for a special week there. So if you do have tickets, enjoy. If you don't, figure out, get a friend. Everybody has a guy. Go to your guy, get a ticket, get out there, because what the Western Golf Association has going on out there is special. So something to be seen, and looking forward to it. Terrific week out there. As far as the CDGA, we have the Illinois State Mid-Am qualifiers happening this week for the CDGA State Mid-Am, and that will take place at Orchard Valley, And we also have it at Crestwick Country Club. And then the actual State Mid-Am will also have Heritage Oaks as another qualifier on the 16th. So a few things going on there. As far as social competitions, we're going to be out at the Highlands of Elgin on Friday. And we are looking for six teams to almost complete the full field to be at the finals at Bowes Creek in September. But we'll be there Friday morning running the four-person scramble. And then aside from that, CDGA's got some amazing deals going on with some of our partner clubs. Sunset Valley up in Highland Park, if you're up that way, receive a special twosome rate of $110 with a cart. And that offer is valid Monday to Thursday after 1 o'clock. If you are in the western suburbs, Bloomingdale, you can get community card rates all day if you're a CDGA member Tuesday through Friday and after 11 on the weekend. And then Bowes Creek, you can enjoy an 18-hole round of golf with a cart for $59 Monday through Wednesday before noon. And if you've never been out to Bowes Creek, again, that's going to be the site of the finals for our four-person scramble where people will win trips to French Lick. But that place, you can be a member for a day out that way. It is worth the drive out to Elgin for sure. Golf Shop Spotlight. Titleist, yes, Titleist product is now beginning to arrive to the CDGA golf store online. We have some accessories, and next week, golf balls from Pro V's all the way to the True Feels, and all will be loaded into our shop, and CDGA members get all kinds of special deals when they think about Titleist. Think about going to cdga.org and go to your member portal, click into the golf shop and start shopping.
All right, good stuff. You got to get a couple of things before the season's over because
that's right.
I mean, middle of August already.
Yeah,
where'd the time go?
I know. And what's amazing is you can get a dozen Pro V1s sent to your home for $54.99, and that includes tax and shipping. You go to PGA Superstore right now, you'll spend $54.99 plus tax, time, fuel, all of it. So,
yeah. All right. This segment is sponsored by Cog Hill Golf and Country Club, home of 42 practice bays with Top Tracer technology. We'll be back next week on Saturday. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Jeff Meller is coming up with White Sox Weekly at 10:30 right here on ESPN 1000. We'll talk to you next week.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.